lots of things on Earth that evolved to live in a low-carbon world are going to live in a high-carbon one, and they're not going to make it.
Brad Warren is a former editor of Pacific Fishing magazine and director of the Sustainable Fisheries Program, which is working with the Alaska Marine Conservation Council to raise awareness about climate change and the threat acidification poses to fisheries, particularly in Alaska. In a nutshell, the increasing level of carbon dioxide caused by burning fossil fuels is not only warming the climate, it's also reducing the pH level of the ocean, meaning it's becoming more acidic. That means death for many aquatic species, according to AMCC and Warren, who recently presented Petersburg residents with data from federal scientists and other sources to drive the point home.
We've already seen a 30% increase in the amount of acidity in the sea caused by our emissions of CO2. That's a huge change. We're going to get to 100 to 150% increase in the concentration of acid in the ocean by the end of this century.
Acidification kills off plankton, crabs, and other shelled organisms by depleting the calcium carbonate they need to build shells. Warren described this mixture of calcium and seawater as a sort of thinning soup.
If you thin the soup, there's not enough, and organisms literally begin to dissolve because they can't soak up enough to sustain themselves. And you get plankton that are huge fish, food sources for fish, that start really getting in trouble. One of them that's well known and well studied at this point is a species of pteropod. We'll get to that. It's a swimming snail. It feeds a lot of fish.
Just about every juvenile fish important to Alaskan fishermen, including salmon, feed on plankton. A lot of that plankton needs calcium for shell growth. Warren presented maps showing that acidification was more extensive in colder and deeper water, with some areas that are basically corrosive to these calcium-dependent organisms. He called it the saturation horizon.
As we put more CO2 into the atmosphere, it sinks into the ocean, it acidifies the ocean, it depletes that soup. That horizon rises through the ocean. The part of the ocean that's corrosive to many of the food species for fish is now here in the Gulf of Alaska. It's under 100 meters. It's risen to under 100 meters in depth. It's rising at a meter per year.
As an example of the effects on one of the shellfish species caught commercially in Alaska, Warren cited a NOAA study of acidification on larval blue king crab.
At 0.5 units of reduction in pH, they got a 67% mortality. The survivors showed a 15% reduced growth rate. So you get fewer animals that live, a lot fewer, two-thirds die. And of those that live, they're runty. It's not really a good thing for people who depend on having abundant biomass to catch.
Warren said it's very likely that this problem will undercut the future of the seafood industry unless something's done to address it.
By 2050 to 2100, it'll be absolutely clear that we're in trouble, and it will be too late to do anything about it. This is an opportunity to see the train coming. It's a very rare moment in history to see this kind of train coming and have time to do something about it. We have that chance.
According to Warren, the solution has roots in the same technological know-how that led to the problem in the first place.
The hydrocarbon fuel revolution that began about a century ago really drove this. It created the amount of CO2 pollution that we have, and it created the wealth and capacity for problem solving that we have. We got into this mess the same way we'll get out of it.
Warren encouraged the fishing industry to take a leading role in trying to reduce carbon emissions at an individual and local level, as well as statewide and nationally, with a call for more research and legislative action. The fishing industry has been able to push through legislation and regulations to address major threats in the past, and Warren said Alaska's fisheries have never faced a bigger threat than this.
They won the 12-mile limit, then they won the 200-mile limit. The Capital Construction Fund, no other industry has anything like it. IFQs, for better or worse, the people who lobbied for that made a case that without it, their fisheries were going to hell in a handbasket, and they prevailed. They considered it to be a survival issue, and they got their case through Congress. When fishermen speak to Congress, they bring a kind of gumboot credibility to it that the world listens to.
For a stormy winter's eve in Petersburg, there was a pretty good turnout for the presentation on ocean acidification, as well as a work session on solutions the following night. About 15 people, mostly fishermen, listened or took part. Ed Wood is a commercial longliner and crabber in Petersburg.
I hadn't really heard too much about this. You keep hearing global warming, you don't hear about acidification, and it's pretty spooky.
One of the local fishermen who helped Alaska Marine Conservation Council organize the program was Grant Trask. Trask is a longtime commercial salmon troller who wanted to find out more about the ocean acidification issue.
I think I'd heard the term somewhere in the news maybe 6 months ago, and when I realized that AMCC is a little ahead of the curve, I really felt this is a good opportunity for our community. And so I'm just trying to learn some things and then also learn what I can do personally and how we can do corporately in our community here on dealing all kinds of big issues.
Several of the fishermen who turned out said they had not heard much about the issue before. Fisherman Mike Bangs was curious to find out more and thinks there's probably something everyone can do to try and combat the problem. As a commercial longliner, diver, and Bristol Bay salmon fisherman, Bangs says he burns through a lot of fuel over the course of a year. For him, it made economic sense to upgrade his engine to one that burns less fuel.
I just repowered. And I find that the newer engines are a lot more efficient, and I figured that the price of fuel now, probably in a matter of a few thousand hours, it'll basically pay for the new engine.
Biologist Joe Stratman is the shellfish project leader for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Southeast. He says acidification is a concern for state managers, and there are ways Fish and Game may be able to help, for instance, doing additional research during the Golden King crab fishery.
We have an observer program that's finally collecting a good deal of data on commercial boats in the Golden King crab fishery, and I think maybe there are some things we can piggyback onto that observing program to hopefully collect some baseline data on pH levels at depth, you know, during the fishery, and I think that would be a good place to start.
It may take a crisis before the industry as a whole takes action on the issue, according to Alan Parks, a fisherman from Homer who also works for the Alaska Marine Conservation Council in the wintertime. Parks likens the situation to the economic threat of competition from farmed salmon. The Alaskan fishing industry effectively pushed for better marketing after many years of declining prices, but in the case of ocean acidification, Parks does not think the industry can afford to delay action any longer.
Now, we just kind of went about our life, and then there was a crisis, and then we dealt with it, but this is going to be a different thing.
Because we can't wait for the crisis.
We can't wait for the crisis. We have to understand it. We have to learn the causes and effects as an industry, and we have to push for good policy to help lessen the adverse effects of global climate change on our communities.
There has been some discussion of the issue at the congressional level. Alaska Senator Ted Stevens last year called for more research into the effects of climate change and ocean acidification on fish stocks. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.